It's not hard to tell that one of the central images of today's readings, the readings for Tuesday of the fourth week of Lent, is water. Well, it's especially obvious in the first reading because there's water flowing everywhere. Fresh, clean water flowing from the temple. Maybe a little less obvious in the gospel, but it does start out with this pool called Bethesda, where there are people waiting to be healed by the water. Couldn't help but notice that there's no water today. Did you have water in your house? Voila. Yeah, I got up this morning. I didn't know, flushed the toilet, voila. No water. I had in mind, when I discovered there's no water, I said, some technician in Maynilad is reading his Anuwan Way, and he decided to play a joke on us. He said he turned off all the water so that we would focus on water today. Actually, no explanation. I don't know why we don't have water again. It's not the first time. Okay, anyway, so we have no water here, but in the scriptures there's lots of water. Let's go to this first reading. This is a prophetic description, symbolic description, of course, of the restoration of Jerusalem and of the grace which will flow from the temple in abundance. Anyone who comes back to the holy city and comes back to the temple will be able to benefit from this abundant, life-giving, healing, refreshing water. It's a beautiful image. Just the idea of abundant, clean water is just so refreshing. It's especially appealing when you don't have any water in your house. Say, oh, I wish I had a clean river to bathe in. So that was a prophecy given to the Jews to give them hope for a future restoration. The time will come when the temple will be again a source of abundant grace. In the gospel, we are taken to the temple in Jerusalem, and Jesus goes there and discovers a large number of ill, blind, lame, and crippled people. And the water they're focused on is this pool at the sheep gate called Bethesda. Now, I don't know much about this, but a pool near a sheep gate doesn't sound very appealing. And a pool with a big crowd of sick people hanging around doesn't seem very appealing either. But there was the tradition that this pool of water had healing properties, as long as you got in first. So we move from the abundant, life-giving rivers of water in the first reading to this filthy pool in the gospel. Something is not quite right here until Jesus comes. And when Jesus comes along, we are to recognize that the real source of refreshment, of healing, the real source of abundant grace is Jesus himself. Now, he has not yet been pierced on the cross where blood and water flows out. Right? So no one knows that Jesus is this abundant source yet, but he has come to reveal himself. So he comes up to this man who has been ill for 38 years. Now, Jesus comes to heal. He comes to restore. He has come to reconcile us with the Father. He has come to pour out abundant grace on us. And he chooses this man, the worst of all, the one who's been sickest the longest, the one who's demoralized, and asks him, "Do you want to be well?" Now, everybody wants to be well, right? But this man doesn't say, "Yes, I want to be well." He says, "I don't have anyone to help me." As if he has no more hope of being well. He's completely demoralized. He's at the bottom. There can't be much worse. He's been sick a long time, can't move, can't be healed, no one's to help him. And so you would think that if a big, strong rabbi comes along, I mean, Jesus was in the prime of life, right? He was 30 years old, he'd been working as a carpenter. He could easily pick up the guy. But that's not what he says. He says, I don't have anybody. He doesn't even say, please help me. He doesn't say yes. He just says, I don't have anybody. I'm a hopeless case. This is an image of the human condition, the human family. It's an image of us when we are not focused on the real source of life, when we keep dipping our cup into filthy water. We keep turning to the world or to the flesh or to some poisonous source in the hope that it's going to make us feel better. Well, no, we get sicker and sicker. That's the inevitable result of turning to any source other than the Lord. What does Jesus do? He heals him. Rise, take up your mat and walk. It's one of these cases, and this is clear everywhere in the scriptures. God has his own plan, and he wants our cooperation, but he takes the initiative. He heals the man before he even asks for it. Jesus is so intent on pouring water out on us that he just does it, whether we even know it or not. Sometimes we don't even realize it. And to his credit, the sick man immediately responds. He gets up, he takes up his mat, and he walks. Now, this man was so low, he could have said to Jesus, I can't rise. I mean, you tell me to get up, I can't, I'm too weak. He could have said that, which, you know, that is what we say. Jesus says, here's grace, here's the offering of forgiveness, here's Lent. Let me say, no, I can't do it. Well, no, this is the right response. Get up. When Jesus says, get up. Take up your mat and walk. So he does it. Good, so far, so good. Along come these authorities who point out to the man that he's breaking the Sabbath. Now, I know it sounds ridiculous to us, but this is not that far from how we think about people who don't do things the way we expect. Anyway, listen to what this conversation reveals here. They say, it's the Sabbath, you're breaking the law. Okay, now that was true. Not supposed to carry things around. The man says, the man who made me well told me, take up your mat and walk. So there's two elements to his answer. There's this man made me well, and he told me to carry my mat. So he did something extraordinarily good, and he told me to break the law, according to their interpretation. What they hear is, he told you to break the law. They skip over the healing part. The man who made me well told me, take up your mat and walk. They asked him, who is the man who told you, take it up and walk? Not who is the man who healed you. Who is the man who told you to take it up and walk? In other words, they completely miss the miracle. They completely bypass it, as if it didn't even happen. Remember in yesterday's gospel, Jesus' exasperation when the father came pleading for a healing for his son in Capernaum. And Jesus said, unless you people see signs and wonders, you don't believe. Unless you see signs and wonders, you don't believe. Well, in this gospel, which comes up a little later, even if you do see signs and wonders, you don't believe. You see, the condition of these Jews is worse than the condition of the sick man. The sick man had a physical condition that prevented him from anything. But these people have a moral condition. They have their eyes closed to the miracle. They're so fixated on the law that they can't see any good in what has just happened. Okay, so that's clear. The man doesn't know who it is. So even though he's healed, he doesn't have an inner healing yet. Jesus seeks him out. Again, who takes the initiative here? It's not like the man's walking around, who healed me? Where is he? Jesus finds him. See how this is a revelation of how God treats us in our broken condition. We're so weak, we don't even ask for help. But God comes to us. God wants us to be well. Look, you are well. Do not sin anymore so that nothing worse may happen to you. In other words, don't fall into the condition of the people who are fixated on the law. You think it's bad to be sick for 38 years and not be able to walk. It's much worse to not be able to love, to not be able to recognize goodness, to not be able to respond to grace from God. That's worse. A worse condition could happen to you. The man went and told the Jews that Jesus was the one who made him well. Now, he didn't say, Jesus is the one who told me to pick up my mat. Jesus is the one who made me well. So he's proclaiming what was good. And again, the Jews focus on the breaking of the Sabbath. Okay, so we have two extremes here. The one extreme is in the first reading. The abundant, flowing, clear, health-giving water. The other extreme is the moral condition of the Jews who are fixated on the law. And this is Lent, so we have to ask ourselves, we have to let our own conscience be probed by this. Am I stuck where I am? Am I unwilling to respond to even the slightest grace? Am I refusing to get into the water? It might be. Because getting into the water is an abandonment to God. It's easy to stand in ankle-deep water. There's no challenge there. But the further we go into the spiritual life, the further we grow in grace, the less control we have. Until we can't even touch the ground, and we're being carried along, we're swimming in deep water. And that's a challenging thing. Remember Jesus told the apostles, go out into deep water? Well, deep water is a lot scarier than shallow water because we're out of control. We have to trust that God is in control and that God will take care of us. God will do what's good, that this river will actually move us in a direction that's good for us. That step or that willingness to abandon ourselves to God is the reason why the other possibility is always there. We might just lock down. We might just decide, I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to let myself be carried off. But that's the attitude of these Jews. They're not going to let some miracle change their minds. And they're not going to let some guy who's obviously been a sinner for 38 years tell them what's important. You see the hardness of heart there? That's a real danger. To be so focused on ourselves, our righteousness, our will, our plans, or whatever it is, that we won't let God move us one inch. We won't let the water wash away anything. The right answer, of course, is to jump into the river. Well, if we can't jump in, walk in, wade in, move in the direction of the deeper water. It might take a progressive stages, right? 1,000 cubits, 1,000 cubits, 1,000 cubits, but keep moving in the direction that grace is moving in. And it gets deeper, yes, gets a little bit threatening and disconcerting to not be able to stand. You feel like you're being pushed around by God. Well, yes, that's true. But that's the better way. That's the healthy way. That's the way that leads to abundant life. And that's where Lent is taking us, to the abundance of grace that flows from the cross, flows from the willingness to stand with Jesus at the cross. At the cross, it seems as if everything has gone wrong. But in fact, that's where the life-giving water flowing from the temple is put on its full display. Enough grace to wash away every sin. Enough grace to carry us all the way to glory, coming from the heart, the pierced heart of Jesus. That's where we're headed in Lent, so let's keep going. Keep going deeper and deeper into the waters of the river of grace.